For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Thanks for that great introduction. After an introduction like that, I don't even want to speak. I'm afraid I'll screw it up, you know, but that's really an honor. I love Xenos. I love coming and being part of this. Fourth time, I may just come and hang out every year now just to keep that record going, just, you know. You know, I was thinking about, I think Xenos might be the smartest church I've ever been at. I mean, the level of scholarship and thinking and serious study and then teaching is just through the roof here. And it really struck me today because I've known some of the guys, Dennis and Gary and Jim, and known them for a while. And then I'm getting to know Pat, you know, the guy who's up here emceeing. He's like, well, what did you do? You know, he got his doctorate in philosophy of math. I mean, this, what kind of place is this, you know? I didn't know that you could get a doctorate in philosophy of math. But anyway, we have to have some meditations on that later, I think. But I want to thank and congratulate all of you for taking the time, investing the time, the resources that you have to come and learn about a concept, a topic that honestly is one of the most avoided subjects in Christendom. In fact, sometimes Lee and I refer to it as the dreaded E word, evangelism. It scares a lot of people. I don't know if you guys get that. I mean, you're just so gung-ho. Maybe you don't realize. I mean, a lot of the world, a lot of the Christian world, has real mixed feelings about what we're here talking about for several days. And just to kind of raise my right hand and confess, I was one of those that for a long time kind of thought evangelism is for some special species of Christians. The way I've described it later when I really thought about it, I thought it was for people who are really, really sharp, like the superstar Christians. You know, people with PhDs in philosophy of math, stuff like that. Or people that are just obnoxious enough to do it anyway. And I think we've all seen that, the obnoxious side, and then there's the Billy Grahams and the, you know, Lee Strobel's, the people. And I just said, man, I'm just an ordinary Christian. This is not my deal. And I'll just tell you a quick story before I get into my main story. Years ago, kind of how I reached this point, this might surprise you. I reached a point where I wrote off evangelism. I said, this is not my deal. It's not my gift, not my calling. I'm not going to be doing this anymore. And the way that happened, it was actually through when I was at school at Trinity, there was an overseas ministry program I signed up for. Good, really good people, really good churches, awesome program. The problem I had is I ended up signing up to do something I didn't know what I was quite signing up for. And when I got into it, I realized this is just not me. Here's the story. My wife and I, we'd just gotten to Chicago. We just signed up. It was the first semester. Thought, wouldn't it be cool to do some overseas ministries? And they had this summer overseas program, so we signed up, and then you had to kind of choose where you're going to go, and we decided to go to the dark continent of England. And we signed up, we said, we're going to go to London, and we're going to reach the pagans of England over there, you know, so this will be real interesting. So we get over there, and I'm kind of green and naive and all excited, and oh, this could be fun. What are we going to, you know, talk to British people? We're going to drink tea with them. That's what we're going to. I learned how to hold a teacup, and for some, I don't know if it's like a weight balance thing, but you have to put your little finger out like this when you drink a cup of tea. So I got all ready to have tea with the British people, you know, as I explained Jesus to them. So we get there, and then we get to this church, great church, south side of London. We get to know the people, and there's this team captain, really enthusiastic guy, and he's welcoming us, and saying, you know, we're so glad to be here, you know, what are we going to do, what's this going to look like? He goes, I'm glad you asked. I thought, whoa, simmer down, boy, you know. He said, we're going to go out, and we're going to knock on doors, and we're going to tell people about Jesus all over the neighborhood. I said, wow, okay, what are we doing the next day? We're going to do this every day. And I don't know how you would react to that, but I'm kind of like feeling conflicted right away. Because I know what this is. This is door-to-door evangelism. And again, some people are really good at it. Some people are called to it. But my experiences up to that point hadn't been that great with this. So I was really wrestling. I'm thinking, I love Jesus and I love people. So I ought to love talking to, you know, strangers and knocking on doors. I'm going to love this, doggone it. So I'm trying to talk myself into it. We get up early the next morning. We go out, spend the whole day knocking on doors, trying to tell British people about Jesus. And I'll just sum it up real quick for you. I didn't love it. And frankly, neither did the British people. They were not very open. In fact, some of the reactions we got were, you know, this one surprised me. You have an American accent. I didn't know. I thought they were the ones with accents. But I found out we were the ones with accents. So I was like, okay, yeah. And they said, well, what are you doing here? I said, well, my wife and I are here. We're serving with the church over here on the corner, and we're just talking about spiritual matters. And I did my best to try to make it sound palatable to them. And I'm no kidding, this one woman, she goes, well, you know what? Why don't you go back and pester people in your own country? I'm thinking, what about the tea? I'm just telling you, it was tough. I mean, something you might not know is that Americans fresh out of Heathrow Airport in London, England, knocking on doors with strangers to tell them about Jesus is not like a real popular thing in British culture. I mean, it was a tough road, and we were doing this day after day, week after. We were there 8 weeks, count them, you know. And now, toward the like sixth week, I think, I finally went back to the team captain going, you know, we've been doing the same thing a lot. You know, are we going to do anything different at some point? He goes, I'm glad you asked. I thought, oh, man, shut up. I said, why? What are we going to do? He said, we're going to do something really exciting this Friday. Okay, tell me about it. He said, we're going to get together with some other churches. We're going to go downtown London, Trafalgar Square, and we're going to take Trafalgar Square for Jesus. I didn't like the sound of this right away. You know, it's like Trafalgar Square is like the middle of the business district. Real busy place, lots of statues and ornate stuff everywhere. And I said, well, what's the plan? Well, we're going to have a sound system. We're going to have a band. We're going to attract people, and then we're going to, because they're going to be really interested, and then we're going to tell them about Jesus. I thought, doesn't sound that bad until I get there. Turns out the sound system was two speakers littler than this one, you know, put up on stands. And then the band was a guy that was strumming a guitar, not very well. And, you know, I'm no musician, but where are the musicians? Isn't it better to have all six strings on the guitar? It just, this was not like high-level, attractive music. So they're up there, it kind of sounds bad, the sound system's kind of overblowing and distorting and, you know, it's like, where are the hordes of people that want to know about Jesus? Where are they? Well, it turned out the other thing is they hadn't checked the city calendar. It was the day of the annual gay march that goes right around Trafalgar Square. And what that meant was, it sounds like, oh, great opportunity. It really meant like everyone saw these people just go by and ridicule us and like, oh, you know, laugh at us. And at the end of the day, I went back to the team captain. I said, when do we get back to go to my true love, which is door-to-door evangelism? That's the stuff I like. You know, I miss that. And so then that's what we did. After 8 weeks of that, I got on an airplane flying back to Chicago where I lived at the time. And I don't think I said it out loud. But I thought it. I kind of made this internal decision. Evangelism is not my deal. I wrote it off. I thought, you know, next time someone gives some vision talk about reaching our world and we're going to get a team, I'm not falling for it because I've already done my time. What I'll do is someone's going to do that, I'll say, like, you guys go. It's not my gift or area. I'll just, like, make money and then write a check or pray for you or do something else. This is not my deal. Because you know why? Because I'm just an ordinary Christian. I'm not a superstar or a fanatic. I'm just normal, I think. And I'm curious. I mean, again, I don't want to dampen anyone's natural enthusiasm for evangelism, but I'm guessing I'm not the only one in the room that feels that way. Kind of some mixed feelings. like, what does this look like exactly? I mean, I bet you some of you came and you kind of, some friends urged you to come, but you're kind of thinking, the E word scares me a little bit. I don't know, what are they going to make us do something weird? I mean, what is this really? And I think, and this is getting to the subject of what I want to talk about tonight, I think a lot of that fear and concern, and frankly, a lot of my experience that didn't work well for me in England, is the sense that I have to do something that doesn't fit my personality. It's going to be unnatural. It's not that it's bad. We all know, if you're a Christian, you're a follower of Christ, you know the Word of God. You know evangelism is one of the top values. That's why we're here. Jesus said, go into all the world, make disciples. That's what we're here on the planet to do. I think we all kind of know that, but it's like, but how do I fit into that? I'm not a preacher. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm not real natural walking up to people at the mall and saying, you want to talk about Jesus? Yeah, it's just not me. So how do I fit in? And so what I'm going to talk about tonight, if you put it up on the, there it is. We're calling it adventure styles, picking up on this theme of the unexpected adventure. Finding your style, hello, your style in the adventure, your approach that would be natural for you. Because I'll just give you a little preview here. I got back from that trip, went back to my church. I was like a newbie at this big church in the suburbs of Chicago called Willow Creek. Kind of just getting involved. I was just a lay person. I was going to school. But I remember going to one of our church services, and Bill Hybels was speaking on a Wednesday night. We had great worship, and then he announced the topic. He said, tonight we're going to talk about evangelism. I thought, oh, why did I sit in the middle section? You know, I could have left, because this is not my deal. I already tried it. That was my exact reaction when he said he was going to talk about this. He said, I think what we're going to talk about tonight is going to be encouraging to you, because I'm going to show you that even in the pages of the Bible, they didn't all do it the same way. They took a variety of approaches. I thought, that's interesting. And he said, I'm going to step through these. I bet you you'll fit one of these. And I'll just give you the preview. What I heard that night liberated me. It freed me up. It told me, yes, I am made to be part of the Great Commission, as we all are as Christians. We're all members of the church to which Christ gave that command to go into all the world. So we're all part of that. But that night I felt it. I thought, okay, I can do some stuff, but it does not fit me to knock on doors of strangers or walk up to people at train stations or malls or that kind of thing. That's not me, but something else was. And I'll tell you what that was after I get into the details here. But the catalyst of what I'm going to talk about tonight, besides being scriptural, is from Bill, and it was very freeing. It's really the cornerstone of a lot of what's in the book that Jim held up, the Contagious Christian book, and there's a training course by the same name. I also tell the story that I'm going to talk about now in The Unexpected Adventure. What I want to do is, rather than just teaching this, I want to tell you a story where you see these different adventure styles kind of unfold in a real-life story of something that happened to me years ago. Jim held up that book, here it is right here, the Contagious Church book. Well, when I was writing that, I was the director of evangelism at Willow Creek, which was a very busy, you know, over-the-top kind of life for me, because I was leading the ministries, and we were doing all these conferences, thousands of pastors coming in, traveling overseas all the time. I just could not get this book written. And finally, a friend of mine named Carl, who lived in Dallas, Texas, he said, you know, why don't you come down here? You need to get out of the busyness of Willow for a season and write that book. He said, Barbara and I have a home in Dallas, a nice area of town. We have a guest home, and it's empty. It's on the other side of the pool. The more he talked, the better it sounded. And he said, you'll stock your fridge and just let you be there and leave you alone and let you. I'm going, I'm in, you know. So I ended up going down there for about 5 weeks. And it was wonderful. I got more than half the book written while I was there. While I was there, Carl, every once in a while, he'd go off to work. Let me tell you a little about Carl. He is an incredible businessman, highly successful. He's the kind of guy that buys and sells businesses like, you know, most of us change socks. It's just kind of not a big deal to him. Casual, but very successful. And it just started all kinds of, he's just an entrepreneur and very successful. He's also, you hear that term, type A personalities? Yeah. Carl's a triple A. Just energetic. He's a leader's leader. He's used to being in charge. He has lots of people working for him. Again, he starts all these companies. That's Carl. Little older than me, kind of a senior, but great guy, energetic. And by the way, he loves Jesus. He loves God. He loves introducing people to Jesus. So that's Carl. He would go off to work during the day. I would be writing all day, sometimes all night. Then sometimes he'd come back, and once in a while we'd go to dinner. But I remember this one day he came back a little later. He said, "I already had dinner." I said, "Yeah, me too." He said, "Why don't we go out and get something, you know, let's get some ice cream." I said, that was, you know, pretty tempting to me. I said, "You know, I need to get out of here. That sounds great. Let's go." He goes, "There's a brand new shop on the north side of Dallas. I've been wanting to get there anyway. Let's go there." I said, "Great." So we'd get in his car, and we drive over, and I want to help you kind of picture it. We drive over, and the parking lot's over there. So we drive up, pull in, park over there, and then I get out first, and I'm walking up first, and I come up, and if you can just picture this, this is the door right here, and I open the door, and it's a long, narrow ice cream shop. And along the front here, this is the glass windows, and they have little stools and tables there where you can eat your ice cream sundae. And then over here, there's like the metal counter and then the glass with the tubs of ice cream. You're all getting hungry for ice cream right now, aren't you? That place downtown is going to be packed after this. But anyway, so the glass cases, and then over here, there's a chalkboard with the flavor of the day. So I walk in, and I'm on a mission to figure out what I'm going to have. I'm really hungry for this. So I walk in, let the door close. I walk across. I guess there was a guy behind the counter. I didn't really notice him, though, because I was on a mission. So I come over here, and I look up, and here's flavors of the day, and I look. Flavor of the day is white chocolate mousse. I'm thinking, that doesn't even sound like a flavor. What is that? So I'm kind of contemplating this and thinking, what am I going to have? Well, Carl came in right behind me, but to his credit, he came in and noticed the guy. So he said hello to the guy, and the guy says hello. And Carl, you know, sharp guy, picks up. He goes, "This guy has an accent, and his appearance is a little different." And he realizes this guy's not from these parts of, you know, Texas. So he looks at him and he goes, "Hey, based on your appearance and accent, I'm guessing you're from the Middle East." He goes, "Well, yes, I am." He goes, "Well, then I'm curious. Are you a Christian or a Muslim?" I'm over here, you know, I'm thinking, we've been in this ice cream place for about 8 seconds, and Carl's already managed to offend someone. I mean, way to go, Carl. Wow, that's a record. You know, I really wanted to check the board again. I'm thinking, maybe I misread this. The flavor of the day is Rocky Road. That, you know, I don't know how this is going to go down, but I was really curious, so I kind of tuned in my ears to see how this guy is going to respond. You could tell he was a little surprised. But he said, "Well, that's a very interesting question." He said, "I was actually raised in a Muslim family in a Muslim country." He was from Syria. And he said, "I've always been a Muslim, but I've been here in Texas for a while. I've actually met some Christians. And yeah, I don't know what to, I'm not that religious, really. I don't know what to think of the whole thing. I guess I'm somewhere in between or in the balance somewhere." Well, Carl, you know, he starts salivating at this point. You see the gears turning. And so very quickly, Carl, "My name's Carl." The guy says, "My name's Fies." They shake hands. He goes, "Mark, come over here." He had this kind of like, he's kicking into boss mode. And, you know, I was like, "Mark, come here." I was like, so I marched, you know. And I come over, I said, "Yes." And he said, "Mark, I want you to meet my new friend, Fies. Fies, this is my friend, Mark." He said, "Mark, Fies is a Muslim. He wants to know about Jesus. Tell him about Jesus." That was pretty much my reaction. That was pretty much Fies. And we're like, we don't even remember Fies asking about Jesus. But Carl said we had to talk about it, so we thought we better talk about it. So it was a little awkward, frankly. And I said, "Well, good to meet you, Fies." And I said, "Actually, I do write and study on, you know, philosophy of religion and, you know, Christianity, and I study world religions and so on. And, you know, there is a big difference between Jesus and Muhammad and the Quran and the Bible." In an awkward way, I was doing my best to scramble and turn this into something and try to, you know, engage him in a conversation. But I'm kind of doing it over the glass or the metal counter there. It was a little awkward, frankly. But I did my best, and then these rude people started coming in the door to buy ice cream. Don't they know God's up to something here? So I would stand back, and they would order, and then I'd come up, go, and then furthermore, and I'd say something, and then someone else would come in, so I'd back up. This went on a few minutes, not that long, maybe 8 minutes or 10 or something. And finally, I said, you know, I looked at him, and I said, you know, this is not probably the most conducive time to talk about this. I said, I'll make a deal with you. How about if we don't talk about this right now? He was into that. He said, that'd be fine. And I said, but if we don't talk about it right now, instead, how about if I bring a book from my best buddy, who's a best-selling author, who wrote a great book called The Case for Christ, Lee Strobel. I said, this book is really addresses a lot of these issues, and it'll help you, even if it's just to be a more informed Muslim, understand more about who Jesus really is, what he claimed for himself, what history tells us about Jesus. He goes, that'd be great. And he would seem genuinely interested. I said, okay, great. We don't have it with us. We'll come back. Let's order ice cream. So we did. And that was it. And we went back. Carl only had one copy. It was the one Lee had signed for him. I said, tough, you got me into this. I stole it from him. And I brought this autograph to you, dear Carl, you know. Brought it into Fies. I said, here's that book. And here's interesting. It was about 2 or 3 days later that evening. Carl and I drove up, came in again. I really wondered how Fies would respond. Like, would he duck and cover? You know, like, oh, no, here comes these Christians again. And he didn't. It was like he seemed genuinely happy that we came back and really interested. He said, did you bring me that book? Yeah, I did actually. Here, he said, great, I'll read it. And it was like, wow. So this guy's really open. And by the way, little side note, almost everybody is more interested in spiritual matters than you think they are. Now, I'm not saying they're all highly interested, but if you think there's no interest, I bet there's a little at least. Or if you think there's a little, I bet there's more than that. Most people, if you're not obnoxious and if you're kind of gentle, if you ask questions and listen, most people want to talk about it. In fact, isn't the guy here the questioning evangelism? I mean, you got to ask questions and engage people and realize it's more important that you listen at the beginning. Hear their testimony first. And I think because we listened to him and showed respect, and he was very open. Now, this was toward the end of my 5 weeks there, and that was about it for me. I was finishing up, and I had to get back to Chicago. I didn't know if this would continue or not, but Carl was kind of locked in on something here. And so Carl said, you know, I'm not going to quit reaching. I like this guy, and I think we got some real potential here for our friendship and our conversations. So Carl, you know, he's praying for this guy and coming in once in a while. Carl, one night, talking to his wife, Barbara, he says, Barbara, you got to pray for this friend of mine, Fies. He's that Muslim guy. And, you know, let's just pray for him. She said, I'd be happy to pray, but you know, Carl, she's just, Barbara's just the sweet, you know, Dallas girl, Southern belle, sweet accent. You know, Carl, she says, I like ice cream too. He goes, oh, you want to go over there and have some ice cream and meet my friend? She said, of course. So they get in the car, they go over, and let me just tell you, Barbara, I love Carl, but Barbara's like the opposite of Carl, and that's kind of a good thing. And because he's like Mr. Hard-hitting all the time, and she's so sweet all the time, and just relational and friendly and warm and charming. And so she gets in, and he introduces Barbara to Fies, and Fies is interested and, you know, really happy to meet her. And then Barbara does this thing that was so innovative. I mean, Carl and I would have never thought of this. She asked about his family. You know, we're like philosophical and talking about all this. He's like, well, Barbara's like, you know, well, are you married? And he goes, yeah, I am. And you have kids? I have a little 6-year-old daughter. Oh, that's great. Well, she starts warming it up relationally. Well, you know, duh, right? But it was such an important part of the story because all of a sudden, you know, he's kind of open up about his life and what he's doing. And all of a sudden, she's going, well, you know, you and your wife and daughter, you ought to come to our house for dinner sometime. And he's going, well, that would be amazing. By the way, you know, most foreigners here in the country never enter an American home. The potential is through the roof if we would just do something as simple as Barbara did. Just say, why don't you come over and have a meal? He said, we'd love to do that. So they did, and then they invited Carl and Barb over. And so they start really a friendship now. And that was a really important thing. And then something else happened. Carl and Barb are part of a big Baptist church, north side of Dallas. And they have these big Sunday adult Sunday school classes, about 100 people in each class. So Carl and Barbara had been doing this for years, and you know, going to this class. And at the end of one of the Sundays, there's prayer request time. So Carl says, by the way, everyone, can I have you pray for a friend of Barbara and mine, a guy named Fies and his wife and family. He's a Muslim, and we met him at this ice cream shop, and really good guy, and we're having good conversations. Would you all pray for him? And the whole class is like, well, we'd be happy to pray, but Carl, you know, we like ice cream too. Where is this ice cream shop? He goes, oh, that's a great idea. Well, he goes up to the, you know, chalkboard and draws a map of where this place is. And this guy's name's Fies and Sikkim, you know. And, and you see what God's doing here. All of a sudden, he has unleashed 100 hungry Baptists who love ice cream and love people. And all of a sudden, they're like, all these, you know, hey, I'm friends with Carl. He's like, oh, yeah, well, you're the third one today. And I'd like some ice cream, and I'd like to talk about Jesus. I, of course, yes, you know. Poor Muslim guy didn't know what hit him, you know. I was like, but these people were really actually nice and really friendly. And, you know, they're inviting him to their church, and they're telling him about, you know, their testimony and giving him books. And it just a very interesting season. But the good news for him is ice cream business was up, right? But they one of the things they really did is they kept inviting him to their church. And Carl was doing the same thing. And he's going, you know, I don't think I can. I'm a Muslim. And they're going, well, that's fine. Everyone's welcome. He's going, really? And so finally he said, I'll go. And I got to believe it was a weird cultural experience for him. It was a very traditional Southern Baptist church. You know, the kind that plays spooky organ music when you're coming in. It sounds like a haunted house, you know. You know what I mean. We've all been there. So, but he comes in and he kind of endures the music and he says, but he listens and the people are so friendly and the people that had been in the shop that invited him, they're like thrilled and they're like our best friends here. And then he's hearing the message. It's like, that's not what I really thought you guys believed. This is interesting. And it kind of is piquing his curiosity a little more. And he's reading, by the way, in the meantime, he's reading Lee's book, Case for Christ. And then something else interesting happened. Some of the people in the class started to get to know him better and found out Fies is not like a career ice cream guy. Turns out he's a medical student here from Syria, just working the ice cream deal to pay his bills the best he could while he gets his MD degree. And he's nearing the end of that degree. And as some of these people get to know him, he confides in them. He goes, I'm kind of nervous about this. I'm a foreigner. I don't know people. I'm about ready to graduate. I'd love to get a job and stay, but I don't have any connections to the medical community. And they're going, well, we got some people that work at the hospital in our class and some doctors, and we'll introduce you. And they did. They made connections for him that really helped shape his career, which was really an important thing in Fies' life. And so you see what's happening here? This is evangelism. This is the body of Christ operating, you know, I used the term earlier, I'll put it back up, adventure styles. This is a bunch of people being themselves, doing what's natural. No one's doing anything weird here. They're all just doing things that they're cut out to do. But God's kind of at work in a guy's life. And I'll come back to that story, but I want to kind of do a big pause in the middle and say this story really is not so much about those people as it is about you. In me. Because I believe, as I've said, all of us are called to this great enterprise, this great unexpected adventure, and we're called to do it in ways that are natural to us. But the natural question is, what would that look like in my life? How would I know? Well, let me go through. I want to go back through the story and point out six approaches that are built right into the story that represent six different biblical styles of evangelism. And by the way, there's a lot more depth on this in the Contagious Christian Training course. We actually have a questionnaire in the course where everyone fills it out. And it helps you determine what your style is for sure. But my guess is, as I just go through this, you'll be able to figure out what your style is. And some of you are going to have two or three or maybe even four different styles. That's legal, okay? So, first person in the story was Carl. What did Carl do? He was very bold. He was direct, and that's the word we use. Carl models the direct style of evangelism. And by the way, in England, there were some people I was doing the ministry with who were very direct in their personalities, who loved knocking on doors or talking to people in Trafalgar Square or whatever. And it just, that's their personality. It just wasn't mine. So hear me well. I'm not condemning any of those approaches. I'm just talking about finding the one that fits each of us, okay? So, Carl was direct and hard-hitting. That corresponds with a character in the Bible named Peter. And I'm going to put up on the slide here the direct style. You see Carl's name at the top. But Peter in Acts chapter 2, the day of Pentecost. Think about this. Here's Peter in Jerusalem, the very city where Christ had been crucified only a few weeks earlier. And he stands up and does a very bold thing. He lets them have a three-part sermon. I know some of you are pastors, and you're at this conference, and you're real busy, and you don't have your sermon ready for Sunday. So here's a three-part sermon from Peter you can use this Sunday. Okay, ready? First point, God sent his Messiah. Second point, you all killed him. That one will go over big on Sunday. You all killed him. Third point, you're in big trouble with God. That was kind of his, at least the opening of his sermon. And then they're cut to the quick because, interestingly, they don't argue with it. They know it's true. This is what Lee talked about last night, the Jerusalem factor. They knew it was true. And they're cut to the quick. And you read Romans 10:13, talks about calling on the name of the Lord. Acts 2, it says, they called on the name of the Lord. Well, actually, they said, what do we got to do? And then Peter said, call on the name of the Lord for salvation. You know the rest of the story. 3,000 people come into the family and are baptized as new believers in Christ. But it started with Peter confronting them with truth, being very bold, very direct. And here's the real key point. What Peter did felt fit Peter. What Carl did was also direct, fit Carl. And some of you are like Peter or Carl. You're type A, probably. You're hard-hitting. You're direct. You don't like small talk. You like to stir it up and create some action. Come on, let's do something. I see a little elbowing going on out there. This isn't like a final commitment to this, but raise your hand. How many of you say, that's probably me? I'm probably more the direct kind of personality, okay? See how boldly these people raise, yes, that's right here. Yes, I think that's God's style and that's my style. That's just the way direct people are, you know. I just got to tell you, this is an important style. I don't think I would have ever had that conversation with Fize if Carl hadn't stirred it up. I mean, you guys actually scare the rest of us sometimes. Because you can make everyone uncomfortable, including us, you know. But we need that. Peter made a lot of people in Jerusalem uncomfortable, and 3,000 of them are in heaven as a result. And so I just want to say, if this is your personality, or it might be, maybe some of you hesitate to raise your hand because you're not really doing evangelism yet, but in relationships and business and so on, you're direct. You're this kind of personality. Just use it for evangelism. Here's what I want to do is I want to officially unleash you, okay? Now, don't hurt anyone, okay? But we need you to stir things up for the rest of us. Create action. Make people uncomfortable if that's what you need to do, but get them thinking about it. I got to tell you, quick aside, when I was 19, I needed someone like you to challenge me. Because I was screwing around spiritually. I mentioned it last night. I needed someone to get right in my face with the truth, and he did. A guy challenged me, a guy named Terry I'd known in high school. And he said, I think you go to church. So, yeah, well, you know. He goes, are you a Christian? I go, yeah, so yeah. And he goes, well, why do you do this? I said, I'm a cool Christian. Special species. Yeah, we have a lot of fun. No kidding. Terry looked me in the eye. He said, there's a name for cool Christians. hypocrites. Now, I call that direct style. And he got right in my face, but that's what it took. And I my first reaction was I got mad at him. My second reaction after he left, it was in a place where I was selling stuff, a store where I worked. He leaves. I'm starting to think about it. And I'm going, why am I so mad at him? Because he's right. And that reflection turned to repentance. And within a week, I'd given my life to Christ because he told me the truth. We need some of you to be very direct. So this is a really important approach or style. Characteristics, people with this approach. You're confident, assertive, you like to get to the point. Second person in the story was me. What did I do? I answered questions. I presented truth. I used what we call the intellectual style of evangelism. It's sort of what the Summer Institute is largely built on. Not exclusively, but I mean, I'm sure a lot of you are this style probably. Those of us with this approach were more like Paul in Acts 17. You know, he's not over here in Jerusalem. He's over here in Athens, Greece, talking to the philosophers. He's quoting their philosophers to make his point. He's debating ideas with them, presenting truth, and ends up leading some of these philosophers to Christ in a very logical approach. And here's what's important. What Paul did fit Paul. He was just naturally a logical thinker. He was highly educated, smart, trained. He loved to debate ideas. You know, we study the book of Romans because it's so logically laid out, isn't it? But I'll give you just a little heretical opinion of mine here. I think Paul was bored when he was writing Romans. And here's why I say that. I think he was in prison, chained up to some guards. He's writing this book, and there was no one there to argue with him. And so you watch. You read Romans. He starts arguing with himself. Doesn't he? He reaches that point in Romans, I think it's chapter 3, he says, well, this is the code for it. He says, well, what might we say then? In other words, if there was someone here to talk to, they would argue with me and they'd probably say this. They would say, should we sin a whole, you know, if grace is God's deal, then should we sin a whole bunch more so God can give more grace? And he goes, no way, that's a stupid idea. And he's, this is a bored intellectual style evangelist who's all alone looking for someone to debate. And I can relate to him, okay? Because this is me. I love debating ideas. I love apologetics. I'm like a moth to the flame where there's an argument. I love talking to atheists and skeptics and Muslims and Mormons and so on. That's just, I'm cut out for that. I just didn't realize that was evangelism. I really didn't. And so that's why I say when Bill Hybels talked about this and he starts talking about Paul on Mars Hill, I'm going, well, that's me. And I'm going, that counts? That's like evangelism? Duh. That's why I do apologetics, is try to bring down the barriers so I can bring people back to the gospel and lead them to Christ. Well, some of you are a lot like Paul in this sense or a lot like me. How many of you say that's probably my approach? I like intellectual stuff. I like answers. Come on, there's more than that. By the way, this is the most important of the six styles. The most godly, the most. All right, well, you can still join, okay? But I just want to encourage you, if this is yours, it's not enough to say this is my kind of my propensity, my style. That doesn't mean you know anything yet. You got to do homework. You got to read books. And you got to train. This is all of these need development. And so, you know, if you're going to be good in this area of intellectual evangelism, you got to study up and know what you're talking about. And that's, congratulations, you're here doing that. But it's got to be a lifelong, ongoing process. People with this approach are inquisitive, analytical, and logical. We're the obnoxious ones with the iPhones who, when someone brings up a question, you go, oh, well, you know, I can look that up right now. You're at a pizza place, and someone made the mistake asking what the Latin name of it meant. And you go, oh, well, let me look it up. And they go, no, we just want pizza. And they go, just a minute. And then you start, you know, looking it up, and then you don't have good reception. Just a minute, everyone. And they're going, just shut up. We just want to eat. some of you are like me. You still got to know, right? Well, okay, then I'm going to look it up and I'll email the answer to all of you later, okay? That's just, some of us are wired that way. We got to know, right? Well, I just want to say, in our culture that is moving rapidly away from the Christian worldview, we need specialists like Paul, like me, like some of you, who do the homework and know how to answer the questions and point to a Christian worldview and, you know, point people to Christ in an evidential, logical, philosophical way. Really important. Third person in the story wasn't even there. That's Lee Strobel. And thankfully, when I do Q&A tonight, he's not here tonight either. So that's good, because maybe I can actually answer the question. He didn't even give me a chance last night, hardly. So I kicked him out of the state. But anyway, Lee wasn't there, but through his book, his story came out, his approach, which is the testimonial style. Testimony, because if you listened to Lee last night, when I was a hard-hearted newspaper reporter, when I was a drunken whatever, and he goes through, he's always talking about his story. He can't stop. He can't help himself. And that's a good thing. That's his approach. That's a gift from God for him to use his story. And same thing with the blind man in John 9, the guy that Jesus heals, and before he has a chance to blink, he's on trial for his faith. And the religious leaders are pressing him for information on who Jesus is and what power did he use to do this. And he goes, guys, I don't know. All I know is this. I used to be blind. Now I can see. Deal with it. What are you going to argue with my experience? And that's the powerful thing about telling your story. It's hard to argue with. You know, I used to be this and now I'm this. And the only way I can account for it is God really changed my life. Well, some of you are a lot like Lee. You can tell your story. And it maybe isn't as dramatic. Maybe you weren't an atheist or an axe murderer or anything dramatic. But maybe you were just a church person who didn't get it and later learned what it meant to really know and have a relationship with Christ and have salvation. That's a great story. Characteristics, people with this approach. You are probably pretty clear as a communicator. You're probably a good storyteller when you talk. People tend to listen. But you also need to be a good listener, so you're applying the elements of your story well to the aspects of the person's life where it will best relate. In other words, you're kind of tailoring what you say to the needs of the person without changing details. So that's a powerful approach. And how many of you say, that might be me. I think I might have more of the testimonial style. Well, let me just encourage you, you know, in the business world, they talk about how we live in an experience economy. You heard that term? It's been around for a while, but they say, you know, one time it was more informational or whatever, but now we're in an experiential economy where a business, people don't just want a cup of coffee, they want a Starbucks kind of experience. They don't want just a bookstore, they want a bookstore with leather chairs and couches and nice music and coffee, and you know, they want more of the, you know, Barnes & Noble kind of experience. They don't just want a cafe that plays hard rock, they want Hard Rock Cafe, right? So if we live in an experiential culture like that, that in every other area that's what people are looking for, what about in the church? I know a lot of us get nervous. Well, experience, that's evil, isn't it? No. It's just, you know, it's not all there is. We need to give truth and information, but experience is important. And part of what you can do that's important in a culture like ours is tell the story of your experience with God. You saw how God uses that last night in Lee's life. So you develop it. Now, by the way, I think we can all tell our story. And in the Contagious course, we help you learn how to naturally, in regular, like English, tell your story without using a bunch of religious cliches. That's important, but some of you, this is your specialty. Okay? The next person in the story was Barbara. What did Barbara do? She was the interpersonal style, the friendship style. She warmed up the relationship. So important. And our example in the Bible is Matthew, the tax collector, who, you know, comes to Christ from a, you know, pretty disreputable, you know, occupation in that day, They were known as swindlers and liars and cheats. And so he comes to Christ. He's like, man, I got to reach out to my friends, the other tax collectors. What am I going to do? I'm not good at confronting. I'm not direct like Peter. I'm not intellectual like Paul. What can I do? He's thinking, I can't do anything. All I know how to do is throw a party. And he's like, light bulb, what if I threw a different kind of a party? That might work. You see him thinking this through. So you read Luke 5:29. It says he had a big party or a banquet in his home. Kind of interesting. He could have a banquet in his home. Tax collecting was pretty lucrative business. But he has this nice home. He says, I'm just going to open up. I'm going to invite all the other tax collectors and Jesus and the disciples. And they all came. And Luke tells the story. And he used this to deepen relationships. His with his friends, Jesus and the disciples with his friends. He knew that, you know, friends listen to friends. Jesus used this approach. He was a friend of sinners. Zacchaeus was in the tree. Remember? Trying to get close to him. He says, we're having lunch at your house. Jesus used this approach. We can use this approach. Barbara was good at it. God used that. And Matthew, God used it. People with this approach tend to be relationally warm and conversational and friendship-oriented. You know, I'm truth-oriented. I'm argument-oriented. My wife, thankfully, is friendship-oriented. Barbara is friendship-oriented. By the way, it was my wife that got me through those 8 weeks in England. She would knock on the door, and they'd go, well, what a sweet American girl. And then I'd pop out of the bushes, you know. What's this? How many of you say, I think this sounds like me, more the relational approach? Wow. Let me encourage you, don't underestimate that lunch like Jesus had with Zacchaeus that changed his trajectory. A lot of people in our culture do not trust organized religion, churches, clergy. You know, there's just been too much stuff in the news, and they don't know what to think of all that, but they like you. And you, man, you have that great latte machine, or you have this apple pie recipe, or whatever it is. And they're going, I'll hang out with you. Just, I'm not into organized religion. They don't know how disorganized we are. But start with you then, and build the bridges, and become friends. And by the way, one of my evangelistic heroes is a woman named Julie in Chicago who went through our Contagious Christian training. One of the shyest people I've ever met. And once she learned how to share her faith and she learned that she was the interpersonal style and that, you know, it counts if you just have coffee and talk to people. That's, for her, much better than trying to knock on a door or anything. In 1 year, Julie led 16 people to Christ. Quietly, you know. So maybe you're more like Julie. You know, maybe do it your own quiet way, but build friendships, build bridges, build trust. And, you know, let God use you. And it might freak you out to think of ever getting up and speaking. I was going to interview Barbara once in front of a conference at Willow. And she said yes, just because she was trying to, you know, she wanted to help me out. But right, you know, like 10 minutes before I went, I said, you okay? And she goes, I think so. And I'm looking at it. She's like palpitating. And your fingernails are turning blue. And I'm thinking, she's losing oxygen here. She was just freaked out. And I said, you know, you don't have to do this. Really? I said, why don't I just, I'll just tell the story. I said, I'll just kind of say she's sitting over here somewhere. She goes, oh, okay, that'd be great. She just, some of us aren't cut out for it. We have different adventure styles, don't we? Some of you are going, well, you haven't hit mine yet. So, okay, let me go on. Next person in the story was actually, it was Carl and Barbara to some extent, but also the people in the class who were inviting Fies. And this one's pretty straightforward, invitational style. Some people are just enthusiastic about whatever they're doing. They're good at getting people to join them. And these people in the class said, you got to come see our church. And it was like, you know, you're in Texas, it's a law here. You got to come to a church somewhere. You know, you might as well come to ours. He's like, okay, I guess. But they were just very enthusiastic inviters. The example in the Bible, as you see here, is the Samaritan woman. Remember, Jesus reaches out to her, the woman at the well. And once she got it, realized who Jesus was, it says she ran up the hill to her town in Samaria and invited everyone she knew If you know the story, she knew pretty much everybody. And we'll just keep going. She invited them and said, I just met a guy, I think he's the Messiah. You need to come hear this guy. And they go, okay, well, sure. And so she brings all of her friends down to the well, and Jesus then speaks to those friends, and a bunch of them end up becoming Christians like she did. And history tells us that's how the church in Samaria started, was just through this woman's invitational style. And some of you are a lot like the people in that class and like the Samaritan woman. You're hospitable, and I'd actually say hospitable in an ever-increasing way. You're the kind of person that picks up strays. I know a woman named Nancy back in my hometown, and I grew up in North Dakota. I feel sorry for me, but anyway. And she was always picking up strays, and one night, a bunch of my friends, including Nancy, were having a birthday party for me. And Nancy brought this guy, and he's walking around, and he had a violin case. And I kept thinking, I hope there's a violin in there. Who is this guy? And I asked a few people, who is that guy? And they had no idea. And finally, he opened his case, and he's like, well, what's in there? And he opened it, there's a violin in there. And he takes it out, and he plays Happy Birthday for me on the violin. He was good. This is so great. Thank you. That's wonder. Who is this guy? Finally found out Nancy had gone to the train station to pick up a family member, and this guy's like some wandering vagabond that she got to know. She thought, well, I'll bring him to Mark's birthday party. Maybe he'll hear the gospel or something. And so that's the invitational style. You're just picking up strays, right? And I think he did hear some things that night. But anyway, God uses that. Some of you are hospitable, relational, persuasive. You're fired up about some new musical release, all of a sudden all your friends are fired up because you're contagious, or some concert or some new movie and you saw it, man, you got to see this new movie, and all of a sudden you're bringing people. Well, apply that to spiritual matters. Get fired up about your church service or about some class or seminar or debate or Christian movie or concert or whatever. God can use it in a powerful way. I'll just remind you, Lee Strobel, first part of his story, his wife invited him to church. He said, I don't want to go to your stupid church. But then she said, the music's hot. He said, that's an oxymoron. There's no such thing as hot church music. It's either hot music or it's church music, but it can't be both. She said, oh yeah, come and hear it. He went and went, wow, that's good music. And the interesting part of his story, he says, he would come to Willow and then he'd go back, the next day, and he's still an atheist. And he's getting up early on Monday morning to get ready, take a shower, go work at the Tribune. And he's in the shower and he catches himself singing Christian songs. He's like, what am I doing? I don't even believe this crap, And so he's like, stop it. But the invitation to church, the music, the various, the people he met, it's all part of what God can use if we'll just take a risk and invite. And by the way, this is one you all can do. Every one of us can invite and bring people. And you just got to be wise what you bring them to. Find something that will really be a fit. The final person in the story is the people in the class that found out Fies was a medical student, and they served him by connecting him to the medical people in the class, helped his career and so on. This was a real service to this guy. And we call it the serving style of evangelism. You can really open spiritual doors by serving in tangible ways. This is a lot of what the missional movement is about, where by feeding people, helping them, helping build houses for them or whatever it is, serving in tangible ways, done in the name of Christ, which is sometimes left out, but done in the name of Christ can be a powerful magnet. Them saying, you care enough to help me here, and you say you're motivated by Jesus? Are you kidding? Maybe I need to look into Jesus. And that was part of Fize's response to these people in the class. Why are you helping a Muslim guy? That really piqued his curiosity. And in the biblical example, Tabitha in Acts 9 served needy people by making clothing for them. And she was kind of a first century Mother Teresa that made people go, there must be a God. Look how this woman loves me. In fact, I like this. her service was so important that if you read the text there in Acts 9, she died. And then God said, this can't stand. I mean, so he sends an apostle to pray over Tabitha, raise her back to life, and put her back to work. So you see, there are some advantages to some of these styles. It's a very cool thing. I didn't ask. How many of you think you're the invitational style? How many say that fits you? I always see the least number of hands, but again, you can all do that. Now this one, the serving style, you tend to be other-centered. Usually this works behind the scenes. It's usually not on stage. It's usually back serving needs that a lot of us didn't even see. It's kind of out of the spotlight usually. And you need to be patient because you're working with people that are hurted. Hurt people. People that are often jaded toward God, toward the church. But as you lovingly, patiently serve them in the name of Christ, you can really bring the wall down and open them up. How many of you say, I think that could be me? Okay? I just cannot overstate how important this one is in a hurting world with lots of trouble when we tangibly serve in the name of Christ and then point to Christ. You know, you can reach the hardest to reach people. So recap, some of you are direct. And by the way, again, some of you are combinations. Lee is number 2 and 3. Lee is intellectual and testimonial. I think testimonial is his main one. We keep mentioning Bill Hybels. He's direct, purely just direct. If you ever met him, you know he's direct. I'm mostly intellectual style. I use direct. I kind of use my arguments to challenge people. I can be fairly direct. I also do a lot of inviting. I really believe in the power of outreach events. And so, I'll be telling a story tomorrow morning about an invitation and how God used it. And then some of you are serving style. But those are the six styles. Let me go back to the story of Fies. Because I'm back in Chicago, and I'm kind of going, well, what happened with that guy, Fies? Well, one day I get a call from Carl, and I hear the rest of the story. Almost a full year after that first ice cream encounter. They've been inviting him. They've been talking to him. They've been giving him stuff to read. He read The Case for Christ. And one Sunday morning, he woke up early. And he thought, you know, I think we'll go visit that weird church again. And he woke up his wife and daughter and said, we're going to go to that church. I thought we were Muslims. You know, yeah, I know. Get in the car. They go in. They drive. They sit down. They endure the music. They hear the message. They hear the gospel again. You know the gospel? You know what it says about the gospel in Romans 1:16? That message of the cross of Christ is the power of God unto salvation. It says to the Jew first and then to the Muslim. It doesn't say that, but it's to everyone else. Fies, his wife, and his 6-year-old daughter walked in as Muslims and walked out an hour later as followers of Jesus Christ. And it is the result of the power of the gospel. It's also the result of the church being a contagious church, a church that is saying, we'll all do our part. And no, again, no one was being, you know, unnatural or forcing anything. They were all doing things that fit them. You see the power in this? The potential? It's through the roof. And God wants you to be on the team, teaming up with other people. Let me give you 3 last observations. The picture of the book that's just to remind you the story, and these kinds of stories are there to inspire you. And let me just say one word about this. This book is actually a devotional. It's 42 days, which is 6 weeks of these kinds of stories. And what we urge is whole churches have done this where they say, we're going to go through it, or whole small groups or Sunday school classes. We're going to go through it and read a story a day. And it's set up that way. Day 1 adventure. I just told you the story of day 25 adventure. And you read the story and then get some encouragement. And I had a young man last night, I don't know where you are, but he came up and told me, he said, I read it and just changed my view of evangelism. And I've had a lot of those stories. So I just want to encourage you. We do these tools to really spur you on. And the power of story, I think, is the fuel that people run on evangelism. So three things to end. Three things God knew. He knows more than that, but I'm just going to talk about three of them, okay? God knew what he was doing when he made you. He knew what he was doing when he gave you your personality, your quirks. I have a chapter in the book called Being Your Own Eccentric Self. I mean, some of us are quirky, and God uses us to reach quirky people. You know, quirky people need to be reached. They matter too. God knew what he was doing when he gave you your personality. And yet, a lot of us spend most of our life going, I wish I was someone else. If only I had her gifts, and if only I could talk like him, or smart like Pat, you know, or whatever. We all just wish we had something we don't have. We got to quit doing that and say, God, thank you. I accept who you made me to be. Develop me. Help me to be who I am. And I may not like, you know, knocking on doors in England, but I love talking to atheists, you know, wherever, at the university or wherever. That's me. Who are you? God made you on purpose. Your personality is on purpose. God knit you together in your mother's womb, not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually and intellectually and personality-wise. So accept that and build on it. Because God can, once you work out of your own design, it's untold the story of what God can do through you. Second thing God knew, he knew what he was doing when he put you in your circle of non-Christian friends. Think about this for a minute. Friendship is voluntary. So your friends are your friends because they like people like you. No one made them be your friend. If someone made them, they're not really your friend. So the fact that you have friends that have voluntarily become your friend means you're the most natural person for them to relate to. So let me put it a different way. God placed you as a missionary in your circle of friends. You're there on purpose. You're there on a mission to reach your circle. And I don't care who it is. I could get, you know, Billy Graham or his son Franklin Graham or Luis Palau or, you know, Greg Laurie or Lee Strobel or whoever, you know, one of your pastors or whoever, and import them into your circle of friends, and your friends will not relate to any of them. I don't care how famous they are, how good a writers or speakers they are. They will not relate to any of those people like they relate to you. So you are the most strategic missionary in the world to your circle of friends. So what I want you to do is get a new vision for what God placed you there. Pray about it. Prepare and take risks and let God use you for your circle of friends. And then finally, God knew what he was doing when he put you in your church, or I'll broaden that to the word fellowship. In other words, I think he put you with some other Christians around you who are different from you on purpose, because he gave them their personalities on purpose. And he wants you to work in a team of diverse people doing your own things together to reach people for Christ. That's why I told you the story I did. Because you could see all these different characters all doing their parts as a team. I think all good evangelism, virtually, is the church working together. It's team approaches. God using different ones of us as links in the chain. So I want to urge you, you know, during the break now and then maybe later tonight when you all go out for ice cream, share with someone else or maybe your circle. What do you think your main style is? Or if you have two, great, talk about them. Why do you think those are yours, and how can you use those? How can you develop them? How could you maybe even build a ministry on them? And get a vision, and then say, well, oh, yours is that? Here's how we could work together. You know, you build a friendship, but they have questions. I'll help answer the questions. Or I'm answering questions, but they want a friend. I'll call you. See what I mean? All of a sudden, there's synergy if we work together. And I just want to end with that challenge to say, you are all members of a church that's supposed to be contagious. So, and you have an adventure style. And once you start stretching and trying it and using it, There is nothing better than the adventure of reaching people for Christ. When you get to be a link in the chain of someone like Fies coming to faith, and you go, there's just nothing better than this. What's better than this? There's nothing. So take a risk. Use your style. Stretch yourself. And God will use you in a powerful way. Okay. Thank you. Pat was just giving me the peace sign. Or is that meant two questions? Is that what that? Okay, two questions. So what are the two most important questions here? No pressure. Over here. Here's the first most important question. Is there a mic over here? Here she comes, right here. Okay.
You're talking about the serving people and how it's really important to serve in the name of Jesus. It's so difficult for me to minister to people who are serving not in the name of Jesus. Because sometimes they have that attitude like, I do this because I'm a good person. I don't need Jesus.
Say that last part again.
They say, like, I'm doing all these good things without Jesus. I don't need Jesus. How do you minister to people like that?
You mean these are people that aren't Christians?
Yeah, but they're doing the same good works, just not for Jesus.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, I'm glad there's lots of secular organizations that do good things. I think it's because they're created in the image of a good God. And often they don't realize it, but they're part of an organization which started as a Christian deal, or at least influenced by a Judeo-Christian value. You notice most relief and, you know, relief kinds of organizations around the world that feed people and serve people, they're almost all Christian-based. Have you thought about that? You ever thought about Red Cross? There's a Red Cross, you know? And Salvation Army has the word salvation in it. That's not a coincidence. So I'm glad even if they don't know Christ that they're doing good things. But if we want to do evangelism and not just feed people and build homes, then we the Kiwanis Club can build homes. The church can build homes in ways that build lives and help lead people to Christ for eternity. So, you know, what I look for is ways to team up with other Christians to do it. And you don't want to be manipulative. You don't want to say, we'll feed you if, you know, you listen to this. You want to feed people, but say, you know, just in a winsome way, here's what motivates us. Here's why our church does this. One, we care a lot about people, but two, we know you matter to God and that you need to know the Savior. And could I tell you my story? And they say, not yet. Okay, we'll come back next week. But you're making an effort to mix loving actions with a loving message of the gospel, the good news. Hope that helps. If you want to talk more, we can. Back here, he had his hand up first.
Yes. Hi. So I read your book a while ago, and I like the six different areas of gifting and evangelism. What I noticed was they're a lot like regular spiritual gifts, you know, gifted in evangelism or serving or something like that. So if you're gifted in one or two, you don't want to neglect the rest of the gifts or the rest of, like, the skills. So you want to kind of be able to know one or two really well, but then know the rest of them as well. So it's like you can do one or two, and then the rest of them you're still, like, knowledgeable. And, like, if you're not gifted in testimony, you can still give your testimony and stuff.
Let me just agree with you real quickly. I don't have the gift of giving, but that doesn't mean I'm not supposed to tithe. You know, I don't have the gift of mercy, but I still need to be merciful. And I agree with you on this. The styles, I think you can find your main areas of specialty, but that doesn't give you, you know, I can't walk through and someone's starving to death. I'm sorry, I just answer questions, you know. That's not good. So I still need, even though the serving style is not my main style, I still have to be willing, you know, Jesus came to see, to serve and to seek, you know, so I got to still be willing to serve. And the intellectual style might not be yours, but 1 Peter 3:15 still says to you as a Christian, be ready to give an answer for the reason for the hope that you have. So I agree there's a degree to which we have to be willing to go and do any of that as God leads or opens opportunities. But I still think, just like with spiritual gifts, you can say, my main thing is teaching. I think of the early church, they said, we got to stick with teaching. And, you know, the apostles can't just start waiting tables now. We just can't do that. So we're going to find some deacons who are more gifted in that area so we can keep doing what we're gifted to do. So I think we do need to be wise about focusing in our gift areas and in the area of evangelism to build on your strength rather than always trying to compensate for your weakness.
This study was recorded at Zenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.